Welcome back in, final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. As we do every Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in the great Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, what's going on? How are we doing?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. How are you guys doing this morning?
We're great. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. So, Charles, let's start with the Dallas Cowboys. Obviously, they are out once again early in the playoffs, and a lot of attention right now on Mike McCarthy and the quarterback draw that Dak Prescott ran where time expires and the Cowboys were done and eliminated by the 49ers. What did you think of that game? What did you think specifically of that sequence? And what does it all mean, do you think, for Mike McCarthy as the Cowboys move forward here?
Well, the sequence covered up what was really just a horrible game for Dallas. I mean, everybody ended up focusing on, you know, the choice in the last 14 seconds of the game. But the reality is you gave up five sacks. Dak Prescott was under pressure the entire game. He couldn't run the ball. You had 14 penalties where it's the weirdest stat I've ever seen, but of 14 penalties, eight either gave your opponent a first down or took one away from you, which is just god awful. And, I think Dak Prescott looked poor. You know, I understand he was under pressure all day, but I think that was one of his worst performances of the season. And then, as you said, the coaching mistakes, the questionable things that they gambled on. To run a fake punt, okay, to get a first down, pick up a lot of momentum in the fourth quarter, and then have your punt team stand out there because you're trying to get the 49ers to burn a timeout, and then you cost yourself a five-yard penalty. It's just a weird gamble. You know, you've picked up momentum, you got a first down, get out there, go. You know, you're in great shape. And instead, you kind of shoot yourself in the foot by, you know, taking a penalty and then watching the drive get scuttled. So all that was bad, and then I think it was just punctuated by a play that, to me, you know, Mike McCarthy said that it came through, you know, it was sort of an analytics decision, which is weird that he would choose to now say, okay, well, geez, the analytics guy thought that was the good play. But when you're on the headset and Kellen Moore – you know, that's the call. Mike McCarthy has to stand there and go, okay, here's where we're at. Is this too much risk? Like, is there too much risk in this moment? Does everything have to be perfect for us to be able to pull off a quarterback scramble, get everybody to the line, it's organized, no one's in motion, everybody's set, spike the ball, and still have a second left? The answer is yes. I know people are going to say, well, that's hindsight's 20/20. It's really not, because the second they did it, everybody thought that. Everybody, you know, the broadcast team, I think, you know, journalists watching it, I think opposing, you know, teams watching that were like, what are you doing? Like, really, right now you're going to pull this play out? And I understand how the defense was being played. I know the sidelines were covered by the 49ers. I just think you can't pick a play where you're stretching the clock to its very limits, and then you're hoping and praying that the officials are where they need to be, when they need to be there, and that your quarterback's going to hand the official or your center's going to hand the official the ball to make sure it gets set properly. It was just a lot of foolishness. And although I don't think there's any coaching change coming there, I think that the downside for Dallas, Jerry Jones is pretty clear about it. Came out and he said, you got to do it when you have this combination of players, because Dallas is going to head into an offseason. They could lose both their coordinators. They're going to lose a number of contributing players. And I think Jerry knows the 2022 Dallas Cowboys are not going to look. I mean, they might be 85% of the 2021 Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, the analytics guy had a way to, like, bend time. They needed Spartan Bob, Charles, huh? They need Spartan Bob to help them out, and they would have been all right. A lot of people don't get that reverence, but look it up. 2001, Michigan State.
They needed home cooking on the clock. That's what they needed. Yeah. They didn't quite get it. So,
exactly. So I'm going to give you an opportunity to piss off everyone here in Nashville. Is the Bills-Chiefs game the de facto AFC championship game, Charles? Huh? Is it?
That's the word, right? Isn't that what everybody's saying? That's the even though neither of those teams is the number one seed in the AFC, those are perceived to be the two best teams right now. I know.
Be honest, Charles.
Here's what Titans fans. Here's what you're dealing with. You have the popular preseason pick in the Bills. You know, everybody thought, oh, hey, that's a Super Bowl team. They're going to take the big step this year. It's going to be the high-powered offense. Josh Allen is going to be the MVP, and you know that's part of what goes into this. And I think the other part of it is just the reality that the Chiefs have been there for years, for a couple of years now. And the first game into the playoffs, we see an addition of the Chiefs offense that we're familiar with, and you walk out of it saying, okay, well they've come for full circle now. They're back to where we expected the Chiefs would be. And the Bills bury the Patriots, which has always been the boogeyman for that franchise. And so, you know, yeah, the thought process is, okay, they're both peaking right now. They're ready to go. And so you have the two best teams in the AFC. The problem is we haven't seen Tennessee hit the field. And I have no clue what, you know, Tennessee's offense is capable of looking like if Derrick Henry has a great week of practice, you know, what load he can carry and how much that ultimately changes what people think of Tennessee and what Tennessee is actually realistically capable of. I'm out on this because I want to see. It is a great game, by the way. I do agree with that. But to me, this entire round, I mean, top to bottom, every single game looks absolutely fantastic. And, you know, Titans fans, don't worry about what people are saying about that game. Worry about the Bengals, okay? Bengals are a pretty good team. And you know, they're hitting a groove at the right time. They weren't world beat. It's not like they beat every great team down the stretch. They had a couple nice, really important wins for the franchise. And, you know, skill position-wise, I'd say Joe Burrow and, you know, the three wideouts and Mixon, it's a tough draw for anybody, let alone the Titans. I mean, it's rough to get the number one seed and then face what's potentially the best, you know, group of skill position guys, maybe for any team in the AFC at this point, notwithstanding Derrick Henry walking back on the field for the Titans.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Charles, on the NFC side of things, what do you make of the Niners and the Packers with Jimmy G and company rolling into what looks like it's going to be a pretty cold Lambeau Field coming up on Saturday night?
Yeah, you know, if you'd asked me about the Green Bay, to me, heading into the postseason, I felt like, okay, health-wise, they're getting key contributors back. Everything's going the right way. Their quarterback is playing an MVP level. They could have blown out Detroit in the finale if they wanted, so don't worry about that game. I felt like Green Bay was probably my favorite AFC or NFC, where I was like, if I had to pick a team where I feel pretty good about that team advancing to the Super Bowl, it's going to be the Packers. But if you had asked me, tell me what the Achilles is. What's the one thing you're worried about with the Packers? They can get hit a little bit on the run. I mean, they're vulnerable. They've shown some vulnerability at times to teams that can run the football. And I'm kind of like, this is sort of the worst draw for them. You're playing a 49ers team that a couple years ago comes into your house. Raheem Mostert runs all over you and you know, destroys you in the NFC Championship. And that experience is still embedded in the minds of the San Francisco 49ers. And, oh, by the way, it's a team that their offense is very much predicated on the run, and they're doing it in a little different way than the Packers have seen over the course of the season. Debo Samuel adds a wrinkle in that backfield that Green Bay hasn't – I mean, really no team has seen over the course of the season, other than maybe if you played – you know, Atlanta and Cordarrelle Patterson at times, but I think, you know, Samuel obviously is a better overall wide receiver and running back combined. So it's a really dangerous team, I think, for Green Bay. And I would be surprised if this is a blow. I don't think there's going to be any blowouts this weekend, but I think Green Bay is going to have its hands full. They're going to play a team that's going to be very run dominant. And as long as Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't go out there and throw interceptions like he did late, against Dallas, I think they got a chance. I think Green Bay's, you know, I'm a little nervous for Green Bay for this to be their opponent in their matchup off the bye.
Well, I'm wondering how nervous you are for the Bucks, Charles. I feel like It's a big pressure release for Matthew Stafford getting the win. And, you know, I think the defense was just terrific last night for the Rams. I mean, I know, like, Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury, I know, like, they're getting a lot of crap today. By the way, I loved your – did you come up with that that gif or that meme with Cliff Kingsbury sitting in his luxurious house and the flames all around? That's pretty brilliant, man.
Yeah. Yeah, that just shows you what I had time in my hands last night as I was watching the game.
I mean, you know, you're out there reporting and writing, but you're still making sweet memes too, buddy. I'm impressed.
If Twitter wasn't part of my life, my work productivity would soar. I would say that.
Oh, no, I'm with you on that. But what do you think about the Rams? I love how they bounced back from the Niners loss. I thought they screwed themselves. You know, they had the Eagles as a basically like a de facto bye in front of them. They blow it. And I thought last night was going to be a good game, and it wasn't at all. I might be as excited for that game as any, honestly. It's really close. I mean, Bills, Chiefs also – I agree with you. They all should be great. But I just feel like the Rams have a real shot here. What do you think?
Yeah, defensively, I mean, they overwhelmed Arizona. I didn't think it wouldn't be a competitive game. I mean, I think that was what surprised me is I think for the Rams, for the fact that, A, you find Cam Akers – I don't want to say find Cam Akers, but he comes into the fold. You know, obviously at this point in the season, it's like picking up a first-round draft pick all of a sudden and putting him on your team. And, by the way, at a running back position that they value a lot and they want to run a lot of their offense off of – even the Matt Stafford. You know, the people think, oh, they bring in Matt Stafford. This isn't like, you know, the days when they had Todd Gurley and it was a lot of, like, play-action stuff or a lot of stuff played off of Todd Gurley's, you know, game. No, a lot of the offense is the same. It's why you see them run the ball 30 times between Sony Michel and Cam Akers. So there's still a lot of those same fingerprints, and that's a big addition for them. But defensively, I mean, every level of that defense played really well. And when I did my All-Pro ballot, one of the things I thought was really interesting when I started to talk to teams about Defensive Player of the Year, everybody assumes like, oh, TJ Watt, you know, clearly, you know, ties the sack record, all these things. I had as many or pretty close to as many people who were on the Watt bandwagon said, you know what, give it to Donald again. It's Donald. Like, Donald's the Defensive Player of the Year. You could basically
evergreen. It's
like every year. It's like they're like, it's if you put the film on, the guy is blowing up, you know, opposing offenses constantly, and it's with double teams. It's at times with triple teams. And, you know, that is frightening to see the Rams play like that. And then, oh, by the way, Odell Beckham Jr. looks like an addition closer to what he was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. Like, it's crazy that he changed teams, earned Stafford's trust, which is real. He really had to earn Stafford's trust, and looks like a guy who is this impactful. The Rams, I'm shocked that it's come together this well for them. I know they've got a lot of talent, but I remember, this is the perception of the Rams. They were soft, you know. It's kind of a soft team, and despite all that defensive talent, you know, they didn't look aggressive and capable of overwhelming you. And next thing you know, they're making Kyler Murray look like Carson Wentz. You really did look like Wentz. And, you know, I think the Rams are, I'd be worried if I was the Bucks and Tom Brady, because this is an addition of the Rams that I think over the course of the season, we haven't seen the defense look like this. And, you know, like I said, bringing Akers into the fold, seeing Beckham play kind of at his ceiling is really, they're hitting their stride at the perfect time. One quick thing too, I want to say about Kingsbury. There's a lot of people asking about him being fired. People need to just pump their brakes on that. We're going crazy in the NFL now, okay? Because if you look at the general manager for the Cardinals, Steve Keim, go look and see what he's done, okay? Like, and I mean off the field, I mean on the field. Steve Keim weathered a lot. They stuck with him for a really long time. And if you fire Cliff Kingsbury, and I don't mean to cape for the guy here, but if Cliff Kingsbury came in and told the Cardinals fans and ownership, we're going to go from 5-11 to 8-8 to 11-6, will you take that? And by the way, a playoff berth where in a season where we compete at one point for the number one seed, they coach, yeah, sign us up. But now you're going to fire him when doesn't have his, you know, highest paid receiver in the NFL on the field. Hasn't learned. I think a number of those players haven't learned how to, you know, take the big step, you know, win the big game yet. I just think it's ridiculous. Now we're just going to say, ah, fire him. Like, he's finished badly 2 years in a row. Yeah, it finished badly, but they got better, you know. And it's crazy to me how quickly everybody just says everybody needs to be fired now in the NFL, regardless of what the reality is of progress.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock. Charles, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning.
All right. I appreciate it, guys. And enjoy the game this weekend. It's going to be this weekend of football, I think, is the payoff for, you know, all the ridiculous things that went on, you know, during the course of the season. This is about as good a divisional round as I think I've seen in a long time.
Agreed. I think it's going to be awesome. Really looking forward to it. Charles, appreciate you, man.
All right, take care, guys.
Thanks, Charles.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll come back. We'll react to what Charles had to say there. Welcome more of your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. You are listening to our show live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio today here on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Going to be joined coming up by Preds TV analyst Chris Mason, looking ahead to the Preds and the Canucks coming up later tonight here on the program. Looking forward to that here in about 9 minutes coming up at 9:30. Thanks to Charles for joining us in the last segment. What do you make of what Charles had to say there? Maybe the best divisional round that he can remember seeing in a long time. We talked about this a little bit last year. The divisional round of the playoffs, probably my favorite weekend of football for the entire year. Love it. Love me some divisional round of the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I have no reason to argue with Charles, but I feel like it's always good. I feel like most years it's exciting going to the divisional round. Like most years, all four games have a chance to be good. And maybe I'd agree, though, this year. And again, I'm not saying it's the AFC. I like how Charles danced around my question, by the way, but I'm not saying it's the AFC championship game. I don't agree with that. The Titans are the one seed and they earned it and beat both teams. But I will say that just in terms of compelling matchup, Chiefs-Bills is pretty awesome right now. So I think that one and Bucks-Rams to me are like, they're just both fascinating games. And if that means the Saturday games are lesser, they're still really good. I mean, I think Bengals-Titans could be a lot of fun. I think both offenses have the advantage in that game. And I think that, you know, the weather, it'll be cold, but it should be sunny. So it should be good for doing everything you like to do on offense. And then, yeah, Packers-Niners it's interesting, man. Watch out. Watch out, cheeseheads.
I'm nervous.
I still like the – I like the Packers, but, you know, but I think the Niners only win if Jimmy G really comes to play and comes to not make mistakes. But some of the stuff the Niners do, I think, can be effective that night.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Heidi from Dixon texting in says, imagine if we had a starting caliber tight end, because we would have had the money this year instead of Joe's Clowney from last year. This coming from Heidi from Dixon on the text line. Get in there.
I'm so glad you could bring back Joe's Clowney, Heidi. Clowney had a pretty good year for the Browns. What did Clowney end up with? He had like 9 or 10 sacks for the Browns, something, didn't he?
Sure.
Bad luck, man. Bad luck for the Titans. But
he'd be a free agent. You can go get him this offseason.
Just keep signing those 1 year. I mean, he did help himself this year. Is that what he signed? Just a 1 year with them? He didn't sign a 2 year? Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah.
He had 9 sacks this year. Bring him on. Bring him on back. Forget Harold Landry. Get him out. Just get Clowney back in there with Dupree. You'll be in good shape.
Well, how much are you spending? You know, whatever you're going to spend to tag Landry, you know, he could maybe, I don't know, bring in JD, as Vrabel calls him, and maybe be a little bit cheaper. But, you know, Heidi, in all seriousness, despite your shot at me, I agree with your point on the tight end. That's a position right now that you look at, and it's like to me, if they had one more player they could count on at tight end and one more corner, you know, other than that, I think if they get all healthy on both lines and everything, and you know, they're good at inside linebacker, Derrick Henry back, I think they've got what they need. Just those two spots, you may be a player short, which doesn't necessarily doom you, because you can look at all these teams, I would say, and nitpick something.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, like, the idea of constructing a perfect roster in a salary cap NFL is pretty hard to do. Now, you know, I know the Bucs brought back essentially everyone from their Super Bowl team a year ago, so maybe it's not as hard as I'm making it out to be, but it's pretty difficult to do.
But even the Bucs, with all, you know, incredible front seven performance last year, good offensive line, we know about the skill, and of course they've been diminished by different things this year. Even with that, they were light at corner.
Yeah.
And that has played out, and they go get Sherman and that doesn't work out. So that's where they still remain vulnerable. I feel like there's a corner. I think probably a lot of these teams would love like one more, you know, good corner. I think that's probably, I mean, what team left in the field is completely stocked at corner?
Packers pretty stocked at corner.
Packers are pretty good. Packers are pretty
Alexander,
good.
Alexander, Eric Stokes, and Rasul Douglas, who apparently is really good, that was on the Cardinals practice squad, who now has 5 picks on the year. It's interesting.
A lot of activity with the Cardinals practice squad this year. Good and bad. Yeah.
Just keep Kevin King off the field this time of year, and I'll be in good shape.
Oh, man. Yeah. Tom Brady would love to see him again.
Yeah. Tom Brady's got a nice Kevin King jersey hanging up in his man cave down there in Tampa Bay. Long, right next to his picture of Joe Rexroad. Brady just loves him some Rexroad, despite Rexroad's hate for him.
Hey, we go back to college, man.
That's right.
Said at the time, golly, Michigan, why are you? He couldn't even play full games as a senior at Michigan. Incredible.
And now he's the greatest quarterback of all time. When we come back, we'll be joined by Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst. Get his thoughts on the Preds and the Blues last night. Look ahead to the Preds and Canucks as well. This is Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And it is that time of the week here on Robbie and Rex Road. Time to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Chris Mason, Predators TV analyst, former Preds goaltender, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. See, Mace, that music fires me up. That means it's a good time of the week here to have you on the program. What's going on, my man?
Oh, fires me up, too, and I tell you every time, but gosh darn it, I appreciate it, guys. And just get ready for a bounce back tonight.
That's right. Big week for the Predators. They started off last night, tough loss in St. Louis. They'll have 3 home games coming up this week at Bridgestone Arena. What kind of stood out to you last night? Preds get out to a 2-0 lead, and then St. Louis comes storming back in that game. What were your impressions from the game last night?
Well, I thought it got off to a madman's pace. I thought that was, it was kind of what I would expect for these two teams. I know they don't like each other. I know you know, St. Louis had the opportunity early in the season to see, you know, the new version of the Predators in terms of their physicality and the way they play the game now, very similar to how the Blues play, to be honest with you. I think now they're very comparable in that regard. But I think the Preds got off to such a good start and were kind of, you know, having their way with the Blues. And my kind of feeling on that is they kept trying to push too hard. You know, you don't have Ekholm in there. You don't have Fabro. And I felt they were just moving forward too much, and St. Louis, you know, they got a lot of their guys back, and they've got a lot of depth and a lot of guys who could put the puck in the net. And I just found that the Preds got caught, you know, in the neutral zone, or whether it be a turnover just inside the Blues blue line, and they just gave up way too many odd man rushes. And you know, eventually, as good as UC Saros is, if you continue, you know, to do that at a consistent pace and give up odd man rushes like that, you know, teams are going to make you pay. There's too many good players. And I feel that, you know, the Preds play hard every night. There's never any doubt about their work ethic, which I love. But I think, you know, we've seen lately, or maybe at times, the details kind of getting a little, slipping a little bit. And, you know, you can't be bailed out every single night by your goaltender. And, you know, last night those guys made some unbelievable shots. And you give teams and skill players like that time, they're going to make you pay. So I feel it wasn't quite as tight defensively as I think it should have been or tried to be, especially with both Ekholm and Favreau. And I think you have to tighten it up a little more, and you need your forwards to help out extra, you know, when you're missing guys like that. And I just didn't think that they were able to do that.
Yeah, and is it just some communication, just some mistakes in the defensive zone, C-Mace? And is it one of those things where had they been with their full complement of their decor that you can play that way, or is that still – there's some stretches last night that you just don't want to see regardless of who you have on the ice?
I think there's some stretches regardless. I think no matter who's in their lineup, they have a way that they want to play. I feel like we showed some examples in the pregame of when they get on the forecheck, and it's the layers of support that make it so successful. So when the D-man are going to pinch down the wall, you always have a forward, you know, in behind covering at the blue line. And I just felt last night they got caught leaning too much, a little too many guys jumping forward without the support. And then St. Louis would get the puck, and they executed. They made some great plays, got out of the zone early, and, you know, one pass, and, you know, all of a sudden it's an odd man rush, and it just happened too frequently, and it was too easy, where when the Preds are playing their game, they get in, and you know, they're aggressive, but they always have that layer of support, whether it's in the offensive zone, you know, the third man high, and then support at the blue line, or if it's in the neutral zone, there's always numbers back. So even though you may turn a puck over or a team tries to quick transition, you always have numbers back, so you're not giving up those odd man rushes. But for whatever reason, I maybe think because they started, I outshot them at one point, it's 13-0 to start the game, that at that point they just got caught moving forward too much, and they're a little too aggressive and kind of pushed a little too hard and got away from their structure and how they normally play, and it ended up costing them. I thought they had enough chances to score, and even though they did get a lot of chances, the Blues' chances were better, in my opinion. They just had more chance to line up their shot, odd man rush, and all that type of thing. And even though the Preds got a lot of chances, I thought the Blues did they always had the numbers back, so the Preds didn't really get a lot of odd man rushes going the other way, but definitely can be cleaned up a lot, I think, moving forward.
Preds TV analyst Chris Mason on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, C. Mace, obviously good to see number 9 back in the lineup last night for the Predators and Philip Forsberg. Is this going to be like his go-to move now of just putting the body to the defenseman and just making him look dumb and then going to the net? Is this what he's going to do on a nightly basis now? It's pretty fun to watch.
It's extremely fun to watch, and it takes a commitment. It's not like he's doing it against just run-of-the-mill guys. It was Falk last night, it's Pietrangelo in Vegas, and he's playing with a different, I don't know if it's a different gear or a mindset, and, you know, I don't know if you want to attribute that to the contract year or maybe just the way that, you know, this whole team has kind of taken on that persona this season that, you know, I don't care who you are, I don't care who we're playing, you know, we're going to play our game. And I feel, and I think you guys would agree, I think he's always had this in his game. You know, there's been stretches of it, and we know what a, you know, competitive guy he is. He's such a competitor. He's hard on himself. You know, he can get in those emotional battles, but it's the consistency that he does it with. And I think this season, we're seeing that Philip Forsberg more often than not. And that's, to me, it's a huge step. And, you know, a lot, I think, has to do with just this. Everybody on this team is playing that their game. You know, you're not always going to be at your best every single night. It's impossible. You just can't. But if you bring the effort and the fire every single night, you got a better chance to repeat those performances more often than you don't. And you kind of avoid those big slumps, you know, that I think we've seen him have and over the course of his career. And a lot of players do, and I hope he continues to play like that, because the second half coming up here, you know, you're going to need to play like that to win hockey games. It's going to be a lot tighter checking, and, you know, games are going to be those one-goal playoff-style games, and I think we're already starting to see that.
CMA's Vancouver, kind of a, you know, middling team, but still a capable team. What's the key tonight?
Well, I think, you know, we've seen this before when you play your division game, easy to get up for the Blues, easy to get up for For the Avalanche coming in, we saw the drop off against Buffalo. I think the fact that they lost last night, and you know they have some things that they could do a lot better, and they get a chance to to get back on the horse right away and get after it. But you can't ease into this one. You can't tiptoe and think that you don't have to play the same way that you would against the Blues or against the Avalanche to win. Because if you don't, they've got enough good players. They've got superstar guys over there. If you don't play that game, you're mediocre. You're not the team that's hard to play against and can go and beat the Avs or whoever you're playing or come back against Boston, compete with the top teams. If you don't play that game, you're just mediocre. So they have to come out right away and, play their game. Don't give up the odd man rushes, the details and all those types of things. So got to be a lot better.
Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Joins us every Tuesday morning at 9:30. Presented to by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. C. Mace, appreciate the time as always, and looking forward to the game tonight against Vancouver.
Okay, awesome. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. Chris Mason joins us every Tuesday morning at 9:30 here on the program. Joe, one of those games last night where you get off to a 2-0 lead, you're out shooting them 13-0. I think at one point it's 14-1, and all of a sudden, some odd man rushes the other way, some breakdowns either with turnovers or defensively, and all of a sudden St. Louis has hung up 5 goals on you, and now you've lost 3 games in a row if you're the Predators.
Yeah, and some costly penalties, and that's talk about a fun game to watch if you like watching good power plays, because actually I really love how the Preds were executing on their power play. But the Blues' power play is also lethal. Yep. They're really good. It's a really good matchup. It's unfortunate because I agree, with C-Mates, is just there's a couple mistakes in there that, man, you just can't have that in big games. So it's a little bit of a detail thing. I'm not ready to say, slump right now for this team. You got a kind of a predictable stinker against Buffalo, overtime loss at Boston, and last night. But you lose tonight, it probably qualifies as a slump. It's pretty important for the Preds to just turn this around and get it going the other direction, because you can go into a prolonged stretches of good and bad in this league. It's not hard.
Now, need to get back on the winning side of things tonight for the Predators at home at Bridgestone Arena. Puck drop at 7:00, pregame at 6:00 here tonight on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll come back. We'll take more of your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, conveniently serving Middle Tennessee with 13 locations. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Ben, text again, says, if the Titans played the Bills, Chiefs, and Bengals each 10 times in the playoffs, how many times do the Titans win versus each? I say 6 against the Bengals, 5 against the Bills, and 4 against the Chiefs. This is coming from Ben on the text line.
I think I'd go 7 against the Bengals, and I might go 4 each against the Chiefs and Bills.
I'd go 7 against the Bengals. I'd go 6 against the Bills. I'd go 5 against the Chiefs. I got plenty of confidence in the Titans.
Yeah, obviously.
Look, they've pretty well handled the Bills the last few years. I'm not saying that automatically means that if they see him again, they're going to beat the Bills. But I've seen the formula for the Titans beating the Bills. They can do it.
Yeah, I mean, last year's game was a weird one. That was just weird all the way around, and Josh Allen stunk. I thought this last game they played this year was a great game, and it was probably representative of how that game would go a lot. I mean, I think both offenses would have success against the other side. And running the ball ended up being the Titans. I mean, that got them back into the game early and was huge for them. And, of course, short yardage defense. Yeah, all right, maybe I'll go up to 5. Give me 5 on the Bills. Give me 5 in the Bills. Hey, I want to do something in the text
all year long.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think they're – look, I'd love them to have more balance. But I like their D. I like their quarterback and passing game a lot. I got to give Ron a shout out on the text line. We were talking about the players with Super Bowl experience, which of course we, you know, forgot Julio Jones and Saffold off the top. But Ron said the Titans should get Howard Dean to come in and give the motivational speech for anybody. And he gave a YouTube video for anybody who doesn't remember this. It was one of the greatest. Whatever, like, we're gonna go to Iowa, we're gonna New Hampshire, yeah! It was just an incredible, like, I can imagine, like, we're gonna beat Cincinnati, we're gonna beat Kansas City, yeah! I can't even recreate the Howard Dean scream, but that's a great reference, Ron. Kudos to you.
It's like the Matt Hasselbeck in overtime against the Packers all those years ago, where we want the ball and we're gonna score, and then he throws a pick six. It's amazing.
Well, if you want to go to that, how about my man Marty Morningwag? We'll take the wind.
Okay, yeah, Marty. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
We know how that works out for
Chicago
you.
Bears will gladly go beat you. Yeah.
Oh, just amazing stuff. Shout out to Ron on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Dennis has already sent in a GIF of Howard Dean on the text line. So good stuff on the text line already.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
How the heck? Yeah, there you go. There you go. Brian. Yeah.
Some breaking news on the NHL side of things. This is coming from Frank Zaravalli, who does great work for Daily Faceoff, says, quote, sources tell Daily Faceoff that the NHL will no longer test asymptomatic players and staff following the All-Star break, provided COVID-19 rates continue to decline around the league. Testing will only then be for cross-border travel as required. And if symptoms arise. So looks like some changes to the NHL testing protocol about to come after the All-Star break, according to Frank Zaravalli. So I figure this might happen at some point. Looks like that's about to be the way things go in the NHL.
And no positive tests across the NFL today, according to Tom Pelissero. So that's very good. I'm not going to say anything to jinx anything, but well, no, I'm just not going to say anything. Just not going to say anything to jinx anything. So there you go. We'll leave it at that.
Oh, man. As we mentioned earlier in the show, some key losses for the Bengals heading into this game. It's going to be interesting to see how that kind of affects the way they do things, especially on the defensive side of the ball. We talked about their rush defense earlier. That's going to be obviously a point of emphasis this week. If you're the Titans trying to run the ball, how much Derrick Henry is going to be involved in that, we'll just have to wait and see. But obviously, as you look around with Larry Ogunjobi out. He's now been placed on the injured reserve list, which means he'll be out for the remainder of the playoffs. That's a big loss for that Cincinnati defense. We'll see what the status of Hendrickson looks like this week as well. But it's possible that the Bengals could be without a couple of key guys on their defensive front.
Yeah, and look, the fifth overall rush defense is already a little bit misleading. We talked about that earlier. DJ Reader is very good. They got some good players, but I look, passing on the Bengals also is enticing. Some of it's been game situation. They're middle of the pack in terms of a lot of the rushing D stats, but passing on the Bengals has been very good for teams this year. So it's just balance. The Titans have that balance, and Derrick Henry helps them find that balance. They're going to be tough to stop Saturday. But I also – like, I think we have the potential here for kind of a high-scoring game. I think for as much as the Titans' defense has improved, there are big plays that the Bengals can make on them and on really anybody.
You ready for a late night tonight? Little Tennessee Vandy hoops coming your way tonight. Big dream matchup for Rex Road. Love it.
Big rivalry, Rob. Big rivalry.
That's right.
I will be there. You can call me Vandy Joe or GB Joe.
Or Robo Joe. Be
a neutral observer. But I'm looking – yeah, I'm going Robo right now, aren't I? I can tell. Good way to close the show. But, yeah, I'm excited about it. I'm excited about this game. I wish it was at 6 and not at 8.
Yeah, the little bit of a late tip tonight for the Vols and the Doors. We'll see if Tennessee responds or if Jerry Stackhouse and company can get a big win tonight against the Vols. Going to be tough to see that late one tonight. We'll see what Joe Rexroad's status is for the show tomorrow, getting back and – I'm sure writing an extensive write-up of this one tonight.
Up yeah, actually, Yeah, I'll be writing tonight. So, yeah, actually, if you guys want to, like, I can, like, pop in about 9 a.m. tomorrow, just let me know.
Okay, we'll see what we can do on that front. That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Darren Donica Chase up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.